here in the chat room, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, Osborne, Inc., Matt Osborne, OsborneInc.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. John Fox is our chief engineer. Ben Birch makes everything happen with the stream at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And did I mention David in Tennessee is my head writer? We're also partially sponsored by the fine folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. They are the hardest working, bravest people I know, and always, always.
Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking with Dennis Olson, third generation longshoreman, about what's going on over in the ports in New York and New Jersey. Also, Zach Carter from the Campaign for America's Future will be here talking about the foreclosure debacle that's going on and really the theft that's happening in this country as the banksters are once again pilfering from those who are least able to defend themselves, stealing from the working class, something the banksters have been very good at throughout history. You know, we used to be able to restrain the banksters back when we had regulation and sane government, back before we had a recalcitrant Republican Party who stood in the way of any sane regulation. From the beginning when this crisis happened, I said, bring back Glass-Steagall. And the guy who was instrumental in stripping away that very important piece of legislation is now running for the U.S. Senate right here in Pennsylvania. The guy who stood up and pushed through Graham Leach Bliley, the guy who pushed through the destruction of Glass-Steagall, now he, I mean, it's almost just, it's one of those things where you just go, I don't know, have we fallen into the rabbit hole? Is up, down, is front, back? Because one of the guys who was the architect of this, he's now going to be rewarded after the crisis with a position in the Senate unless we figure out how to get people out to vote. Anyway, we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about the Marcellus Shale, what's going on here in Pennsylvania. We're going to talk about taxes. We're going to talk about some horse race Senate races. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. I wonder if you saw this today. The Dow Jones crossed 11,000 for the first time in 5 months. And, you know, everybody's, woohoo, Wall Street's back. Woo, the recession's over. For who? Most of the working people that I know are still struggling. Most of the working people that I know are you know, having a tough time of it. But the Dow's back, the NASDAQ, peaked its little head up as well, and everybody's happy on Wall Street. The bonuses are back. The CEO pay is filling the coffers. And you look at this foreclosure mess, and it is a mess. And we have got to figure out how to get a hold of this. And Congress had better do something. The president had better do something. Not signing a bill that would have been made it easier for banks to throw people out of their house is not enough. I agree the president shouldn't have signed the bill. I would have vetoed it. That would have sent a clear, strong message. Would have sent a clear, strong message. The economy lost 95,000 jobs in September, while the private sector, surprisingly, added 64,000. So what that's telling me is that the war on teachers, the war on public sector workers, the Republicans are winning. And the Republican answer to our situation is not to help the poor, is not to help, you know, people who are being foreclosed on. No, screw those people. The answer is cut, 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 so that the wealthy can have more money. With this, again, this nonsensical belief that somehow, if we cut taxes and we give Warren Buffett more, if we give Bill Gates more, if we give the very top more, that they may bestow upon us the refreshing rain, the crumbs that fall from the table that will nourish us. Oh, won't it be wonderful when the wealthy have it all and they so willingly share? I'm being facetious, mind you, because that's never happened in human history and it never will. What we're talking about are the same failed economic policies that got us into this mess. And what you've got is an American public who doesn't remember the day before yesterday, and they're buying into this again and again and again. I watched the Ohio debate last night between John Kasich and Ted Strickland. And I'm telling you, Ohio is in big trouble. Ohio's in big trouble because this Kasich guy's going to win. All the polls have him far ahead. Chances are he's going to win. And what he is talking about doing is slashing the business taxes, just like they want to do here, slashing all the taxes on the very, very wealthy, the people who have money. So what then happens? Well, what happens is you cut services, you cut education, you cut all those programs designed to help the middle class. And remember, these are middle class programs as well. The ability to go to college is something that the middle class has fought for. And the Republicans answer to everything is, well, we need to cut food stamps. We need to cut out food stamps. And Rick Santorum was on one of these talking head TV shows. And you'll love this.
Poverty among African Americans and among single, never married women was at the lowest rate ever in the history of this country. So Obama's policies are not working. Bush policies worked for a long time in that, in fact.
All right, well, we'll see what the voters think.
Do you need to hear that again? I mean, stop and listen to what the guy had. Listen to what he said.
Poverty among African Americans and among single, never married women was at the lowest rate ever in the history of this country. So Obama's policies are not working. Bush policies worked for a long time in that, in fact.
All right.
Did you hear that? I mean, I understand that Republicans, you know, basically lie. I get that. But that, my friends, that was a bold-faced lie. He said, yeah, remember under the Bush administration, poverty among African Americans and among single unmarried women. Poverty was at the lowest rate ever in the history of the country under the Bush policies. I'm kind of curious where Tricky Ricky pulled those numbers out of. I got to be honest, there's probably something brown surrounding those figures. I'm sure he reached behind him and popped him right out of his tuchus because there is nothing factual about what he had to say. In fact, the Bush years were an absolute disaster for everyone in the working class and below in this economy. Now, if you were in the top 2 or 3%, hey, it was, yeah, baby, we're happy days are here again. But the vast majority of people in this country saw their standard of living go backwards. In fact, people living in poverty during the Bush time in the office jumped 26.1%. 26.1% poverty jumped under the Bush years. And you've got Tricky Ricky out here going, oh, well, you know, things are great. Longing for the days of the shrub. Here's the thing. Let's look at a little historical accuracy, shall we? Just a little facts. Just the facts, ma'am. When Clinton left office in 2000, there were about 31 million people in this country living in poverty. Those are census data numbers. When Bush left office 8 years later, that number had jumped to nearly 40 million. Our show page over at the Rick Smith Show, also the Twitter thing we're doing as well, reaching our listeners any way we can to make sure that you have an opportunity to reach the program and get the message out and to have a conversation. And, you know, and I look at what's going on, and we're seeing the destruction of work in this country, and the destruction of work, the way employers have gone after workers and their wages, causing a plethora of negative consequences, and foreclosures being one of them. And I got to tell you, right from the beginning, I thought Obama should have taken the bull by the horns and started a government program, much like FDR did. To me, that was the answer. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Sandra on line one. How are we doing today, Sandra?
Oh, no, I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
Listen, no, I just wanted to comment on, this foreclosure madness is just coming full circle, but the worry for us is that the banks are going to be going back to the government again. I mean, that was part of that whole bill that Obama really couldn't sign because the outrage, you know, is kind of mounting. But like you said, he should have vetoed it. That would have been a better thing than just sitting around. In fact, he needs to declare, don't let the markets decide to declare a moratorium because they can't figure out how to squeeze people. They need to declare a moratorium, and they have to clean up the fraud the way it originated. This is the problem. The reason why the market isn't working is because there's no trust, because the assets are fraud. It's all fraudulent. I mean, it's not simple, but it really does stem from the original fraud that happened with the loans.
Yep, and had we done what I said we should have done right from the beginning when Bush bailed them out, I said from the beginning, you break them up, you nationalize them, you break them up, and you make small community banks out of them. Go back to the way we used to do banking, boring, simple, and you separate banking, the simple, boring stuff, mortgages and basic loans, from the gambling houses, from the investment houses. You keep them separate. And if the investment people lose out, that's their problem. You can't have a mortgage sector based on casino gambling. It's just never going
to
work.
Well, yeah, and also, you know, Congress gave them permission to mark their assets to magic. So we really don't know what's on their balance sheet. And what's happening is every time the economy looks like it's recovering, they release a little bit more of their bad assets. So unless we totally identify the toxic, it's not going to clear up. I mean, I don't think people realize just how horrific this credit market problem is. I mean, the housing thing is just a tragedy. I feel sick looking at what's going on in this country.
Because we allowed these banksters, we allowed these thieves, these marauders, these criminals to run rampant. And, you know, the amazing thing to me is we got a guy here in Pennsylvania who's running for Senate who was one of the key architects of allowing them to do that, and yet we're probably going to elect this guy to the U.S. Senate.
Well, who is that guy? Yeah, you mentioned that. Who is it?
Pat Toomey. Pat Toomey, the former president of the Club for Growth.
Incredible. I mean, all these people are being rewarded for, you know, just horrific, as I call them, crimes against the U.S. And, you know, I really appreciate you hitting on, you know, working people and work and how it's disappearing in this country. To be honest, I don't know how the U.S. will sort of maintain itself with mass unemployment, because a safety net in this country is a job.
Absolutely. You can't be in the middle class without one.
You know, there is no welfare state like Europe and the U.S. You work. But if there's no work, I don't know. You know, anyway, I'll let you go. I just, you know, wanted to call in. And
I appreciate it, Sandra.
Yeah.
Call back anytime. Thanks so much. You know, and again, it comes back down to simple policy. What we should have done, and you'll remember I talked about this ad nauseum at the end of 2008, at the beginning of 2009. We should have, as the government, we the people should have taken on those loans. Because we've got them anyway. We should have refinanced them at a reasonable rate at market value. The banks would have taken a haircut. The homeowners would have stayed in their homes. Property values would have stabilized, and you wouldn't have this mass thievery that's going on right now. But we wouldn't do that. Why? Because we've got these freaking Republicans who are, oh no, that's socialism. Hey, dummy. When the boat's sinking, you gotta do something. These freaking morons, they want the ship to go down. Why? Because they want you desperate.
Yeah, but it's even better if we would have gone the way you just described, Rick. You would have saved those homes. Those people would have paid it off. They could have paid back the government, and the government actually could have made a few shekels.
Oh, you mean like they did after the Depression? When they had the Home Ownership Loan Corporation? You mean like that?
Yeah, that socialist concept, you know.
No, I mean, look, you know, I still remember this woman we talked to from Philadelphia a couple years ago. I for the life of me, don't remember her name, but when we were heavy on this, idea of having a government program to buy these loans at reasonable rates, with decent terms. You know, you're not getting the house for free. You're paying for it. But you know what? The market took a haircut. Everybody should take a haircut, but keep people in their homes. This woman said when they bought their house, she was paying $900 a month. She thought she was signing a fixed rate mortgage form. Say whatever you want. Was she stupid or was it criminal? I don't know. I'm gonna side on the side of they told her it was fixed and it wasn't. And maybe even the paperwork was doctored. Who knows? But at the end of it, from $900 a month that she could afford, her and her husband and her family could afford, up to $2,200 a month 2 years later. Because the rates had just gone crazy with these adjustable rate mortgages. And they couldn't afford the $2,200 a month. And all she wanted, and this is why I said this was a good idea, all she wanted was to pay the $900 a month she agreed to. And to me, that makes sense. That's how you stabilize neighborhoods. That's how you stabilize the housing market. It seems simple to me.
Well, I would bet, Rick, that knowing these banks, investment companies, they inserted a sentence or two which gave them leeway under certain conditions to change that from a fixed rate to an ARM. I would bet because if it's outright fraud, you know, somewhere along the line, if they do it in enough cases, the government's going to come in and investigate.
Well, they're going to start to investigate.
Well, might find that there was fraud, but what I'm saying is I'm sure they inserted some things in that agreement that she signed that gave them under certain circumstances. Now, is that ethical? Oh, absolutely not. It may even be illegal, but I would bet that there's some language in there which they're going to rest their case on.
And what frustrates me is Obama has relied on the banks. He has relied on the private market, which amazingly, you have people running around going, oh my God, he's a socialist! And I go, can you even spell socialist, let alone define what it is? I mean, you look at T-Bonics. You look at these people at these tea parties with their T-Bonic signs, misspelled, illogical. Hey, he's a socialist, socialist. He's a fascist, communist, socialist, Marxist, Leninist. Really? Well, you'd be afraid if you knew what that meant.
Right. I mean, basically, the basic philosophy of the Republican Party, especially today, is programs that help the poor, programs that help human beings, that's wrong. That's spending money the wrong way. It's socialism. But when we give money to corporations, no matter how unfruitful, no matter how wrong, that's capitalism, Rick. It's capitalism when you enhance the coffers of corporate America. It's socialism when you help, the people of America.
What happened is the banks pocketed the money. We gave them all that money. They shoved it right into their pockets. And what happened is the investor class has gotten richer because what's happening, and you know it's happening, all these homes that are being foreclosed are being sold for pennies on the dollar to investors. And those investors are going to hold on to them, and then they're going to sell them off to the schmucks in a year or so when the prices come back up, and we're going to overpay for them again. So families continue to get screwed. State and local governments are getting screwed. Charities are broke, and we keep hearing,
We don't need health care reform. Let the churches do it. Well, you know what? The churches aren't doing it because the churches are broke too. Except well, these crazy ones.
If I can interject here, I can tell you that is not just a supposition. That's not just a bunch of crazies. Mr. Toomey, Club for Growth. Well, my state senator is also from the Club for Growth, yeah. And that was exactly what he was saying. Let the churches fill in that void.
Yes. They've
I mean, that's crazy. Job. First of all, I have a philosophical problem with that, but beyond that, they can't do that. Come on. Nope. Let's get real. A lot of the churches are just like corporations and companies. They're pretty much broke.
Truer words. We're going to take a quick break right here. We're right back with Dennis Olson. He's a third-generation longshoreman from New Jersey. We're going to talk about the strike, or the I guess it's a walkout that's going on there. We're right back after this.
I got a picture in my pocket of a lucky one, and I'm asked the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat, it is my business hat. I'm up at 1 a.m., I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, teaching America for the better.
Apparently, you and I owe an apology to the extravagantly rich in our society. They're reported to be in a deep pout and a political funk because we the people have hurt their feelings. This stems from the public's simmering anger over the fact that the Wall Street barons who crashed our economy are back to paying themselves multi-million dollar bonuses, while the corporate CEOs who keep downsizing and offshoring our middle-class opportunities are grabbing bigger paychecks than ever for themselves. The wealthy swells are upset by this anger and feel picky.
In my opinion, to run a society there, Dennis, not at all.
It's scary. It's scary because it seems that nobody is putting pressure on these people to come clean or do the right thing. It's amazing. Like I said, the stevedore over there, Holt, seems he don't have to answer to anybody. It's crazy the things they do. And like I said, a lot of people are being hurt, and it's a race to the bottom line.
Are you getting it? I mean, I know you've got a Republican governor who's not the greatest friend of labor, but even he's got to see that this kind of a move is actually hurting his state.
Definitely. It's a strain. It's going to be a strain on the state because the people that are already employed at that other stevedore company, they're not making hours. They're collecting benefits themselves. They're not. They have to, from what I understand, they have to reach 1,800 hours to qualify for benefits. And you know, when they get close to that, they cut them. So they're a strain on the state. And then my family, if something happens, I'll be a strain on the state. So, you know, you're not there. It's a strain on everybody. Like you said, it's going back to the Robert Barron days where the people at the top and these people are controlling different things. They're making out, and the people, the workers are getting killed.
Oh, man. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Dennis Olson, third-generation longshoreman. Remember, check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. I got to tell you, I'm fit to be tied over this because, you know, I know there are a lot of people in our listening area who are just going, well, you know, it's not me. What should I care? You know, and that mentality is just, it's just eating at me, Dennis. It's making me crazy.
Well, that's what it is, Rick. It's maybe not you now, but it may be you tomorrow. Because this is just going, you can see it. It's just going downhill. They're hitting everybody. Right now, it's a longshoreman. Who's it going to be next? You know, it's crazy. It's crazy.
So are you,
it's scary.
Are you getting any help from, the stuff's got to be trucked out of there or pulled out on trains or something. Are you getting any help from the people who are doing that? If you put up any pickets to boycott, anything like that?
Well, like I said, right now the international's in contact with the AFL-CIO, hopefully the national boycott. They've already moved to the other pier, and I don't think there's too much we can do in regards to pickets at that pier. So right now it's a waiting game. Hopefully,
how far
somebody comes to the senses. Or hopefully that stevedore who is employing, poverty, basically creating poverty wage jobs, is confronted and made to do the right thing.
How far away is this this new pier at? Is it somewhere that you guys could travel to?
New pier? Literally, yeah. Right next door.
So,
literally.
And then explain to me how it's not possible that you can follow the work.
Well, they opted not to use the International Longshoremen Association. They're using now a SCAB, basically a company-run union. So, you know, it's Del Monte's choice, and it's Holt's choice not to use the International Offshore Association.
Well, Dennis, I appreciate you coming on and talking to me about this. We're going to keep an eye on this here at the Rick Smith Show. And if there's anything we can do to help, please let me know. I wish you guys nothing but the best, and keep the faith. I'll tell you, I'm not buying another Del Monte product.
I hate it, Rick. I appreciate the time that you've given me. Let me get it out here. And I hope everybody that's listening also boycotts Del Monte. And, you know, hopefully good things come out of this.
Best wishes, buddy.
Thank you, Rick.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break right here. We're going to come back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Drowning in crafty lies. Save the USA and resume the savage mind. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
If your loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free consumer report by Calhoun Associates by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of the 7 Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
Working class hero is something to be.
And you know, you wonder. Yeah, you listen to Warren Buffett there. There is class war going on. And it's only when we fight back that they go, oh, you're engaging in class warfare. It's only when you fight back that they say that you're actually engaging in class warfare. Amazing stuff to me. And, you know, as we've reduced the amount of tax that we've expected from the ones who have been given so much, as that has reduced, you've seen our infrastructure crumble. You've seen our education systems crumble. You've seen our health care crumble, unless you've got big money. And when I left out of here last night, it's rare that I go off on a personal crazy rant like I did last night about traffic, but it took me an hour to go 10 miles last night. So when I got out of here at, you know, about 12:15, 12:20, I go about 3 miles and I hit dead stop traffic at 12:30 in the morning. And I'm like, you know, somebody doesn't like me very much. And this, again, you know, we have no vision. Our politicians have no vision of what the future is going to be. And if we continue down the path, like we talked about last night, continue down this path, our infrastructure is going to continue to crumble, and it's going to continue to be undersized, which means we're going to have mass gridlock most of the day.
And what our listeners need to understand, Rick, this isn't just a local highway. This is a highway that goes from literally Canada all the way down into Louisiana. It's probably one of the most heavily used interstates in the entire country. It's a key artery for our economy. And to have the kind of problems that we've been having on the way of the show today, tonight, it was back to back to back. I mean, we were going bumper to bumper for 15 miles on an interstate. It's unbelievable. I mean, I've been out in L.A., and out there, that's normal. But, my good Lord, in an interstate, in a relatively, I wouldn't say, well, a lot of it, 81 around here is in rural areas.
Mostly rural areas.
Here we are. We're having massive traffic jams.
Now, what do you think is going to happen as we continue to develop? Because this area is experiencing a building boom. The skinny roads that get us to the interstates are severely undersized. What happens when we develop those open spaces? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you're sitting out on there on the highway, tell me how it is. You enjoying our infrastructure? How's that working out for you? Because I got to tell you, the last couple of days, I have just been absolutely furious at the fact that we can't seem to get anywhere in this area because they've got construction on all the major arteries. I mean, can't you just do one? Why you got to screw up both sides? And then you have one minor hiccup. It's just one minor hiccup. And you're backed up for days. And I think, again, I would love to see them put in public transportation, put that light rail in. I'd love to have that.
And again, that would have been a perfect opportunity to use a lot.
But we're not going to do it. We're just not going to do it. And why? Because we are going to have Republicans taking us back to the Gilded Age.
And
we're going to have the grand old party taking us back to the good old days. The good old days when you couldn't afford a loaf of bread. And you look at what's going on in California. And that's our crystal ball to the future. California is our future. Only it's happening to them right now. Greenspan says, well, we need to go and have some austerity programs because we need to cut those welfare people. We don't need to raise taxes on the very wealthy. We need to cut those people. And you look at the California budget. No new taxes, no new fees, none of that. So, rich people, you're A-OK. They slashed $19 billion from the budget. Where'd they get it from? They got it from public schools. They got it from... They got it from public sector workers. They got it from workers in general. They got it from their transportation budget. You know, over the last four or five years, California has slashed $18 billion from education. We are going to have, you know, California is going to be the kind of place where people are going to walk around and go, hey, what's 2 + 2? 7? We've completely walked away from our responsibility for education. And I think it's because we don't think that we're going to need people in the future to help us, to wipe our behinds or pick our nose or something. And you look at what's going on here. I mean, in this state, we need about $3 billion in transportation money. About $3 billion. And it's just not coming because it's not going to be there. And we have got to have the ability to offset some of this pain with a reasonable asking. Simply ask the natural gas industry to make some contributions. Look, I'm buying the Tom Corbett frame. I am buying the Corbett frame. No more taxes. We're just going to ask for contributions. So natural gas industry, we want contributions. And this coming week, the Pennsylvania State Senate is going to come back on Tuesday. I don't know if they've answered the governor's letter yet. But on Tuesday, they're supposed to be back. They'll be back for 3 days next week. So they've got 3 days to pass an extremely rational Marcellus Shale bill, just like the one that the House sent them. Because if we do nothing, folks, If we do absolutely nothing, we are going to lose about $100 million. In addition to the $70 million that we would have gotten from the budget negotiation. So like California, we are going to see necessary programs cut. We're going to see environmental programs cut. We're going to see public school programs cut. Here in Harrisburg, they're talking about doing away with kindergarten. We're going to see children's services cut, elderly people's programs cut, and programs to the needy. None of these people have lobbyists. They've got no high-powered lobbyists to protect their interests. No, no. I'm saying this is simply unacceptable. The taxpayers are going to get a screw job if these Republicans don't get off their behinds and do their job. And big business is going to get off. Christine O'Donnell style, but they're going to get off tax-free. So you need to contact them. You need to contact your state senator. Tell them it's our gas. We should prosper, too. It's that simple.
There have been some suggestions, Rick. I don't know how you feel about it. I would imagine it's a little better than the Republicans' proposal involving insurance companies and taking out insurance policies, which I think is crazy. But then again, this is the year 2010. There have been some suggestions of setting up separate accounts, one to deal with the issue of, you know, contamination of problems where you have contaminated water supply. Another account would be set up to deal with setting aside land in that area to preserve it and the environmental concerns. Would that be a good compromise? At least that way, this is just me off the top of my head, at least that way I believe you could get a reasonable tax from these companies. The Republicans' proposal is basically let's minimize the taxes for these people, period. I mean, they're using the guise of insurance, but let's be honest. They want them taxed at the lowest rate possible. Would that be a reasonable compromise to set up individual accounts for specific purposes but fund them adequately? Would that work? Is that an alternative rather than taxing them and putting it in the general fund? That seems to be the Republicans' complaint. You put it in the general fund, and according to them, according to, I don't agree with them, it's going down a rat hole, and the money, it would be a constant demand for more and more and more money.
Well, let's flesh this out a little bit. The state needs money, desperately. We need $3 billion to pay the federal government back for unemployment compensation. We have got a big budget hole coming up next year, a couple billion dollars from what I understand. If we don't get revenue from somewhere, it means slash and burn. It doesn't mean we're going to raise taxes on people. It's not going to happen. Republicans will not allow that to happen. So it means slash and burn. I say that the Marcellus Shale is our natural gas. It's our resource. People in this state should benefit from it. And I look to Alaska as my example. The state of Alaska, the good socialist state led by, you know, que sera, sera Palin, pays their citizen every year for what's extracted from the ground because the state of Alaska views that oil as the state's resource. Here in this state, I don't think we're... I know the media perception and what's being pushed down our throat is not that frame. But I'm saying what's under our feet is the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's resource, and we should benefit from it. Would I mind insurance things set up, pots set aside to clean up the inevitable? No, I don't mind that at all, as long as it's adequately funded and it's there when you need it. My problem with that becomes once the pot gets to a certain size, do we then go back and say, you guys have given enough, like we did with the state teachers' pensions, where the state said, there's plenty of money in there. We'll never need any more money. And for 19 years, they stopped making contributions. And now here we are in a crisis having to make up 19 years worth of back contributions. That's my problem with it. I say we tax them at a set rate, so that they know what the cost of doing business in Pennsylvania is, make it reasonable, and I think what they've proposed is very reasonable. It's about a 5% tax. even though they like to, you like to figure the percent and the cents, because they want to confuse people. Because I actually had someone tell me, they want to take 39% of everything that comes out of the ground. That's outrageous. No. They want 39 cents per thousand cubic feet, which works out to about a 5% tax, which to me is very reasonable. Why don't we just do like we do the rest of the things, Jake? When you go to the store and you buy this, you know, this eyeglass case or this cell phone, what do you pay in tax? You pay 6% sales tax. I say let them pay 6% tax like the rest of us. So then it'll be about 40-some cents a thousand cubic feet. But at the end of it, I do believe we have to get some of the money. It has to go into our general fund, and it has to fund education, because we are changing our education system to meet the demands of that industry. We are changing how we're teaching our kids to produce workers for their business. They are benefiting from our tax dollars. The least they could do is contribute a little bit. You know, I'm just asking for some contributions. Maybe we can get Tom Corbett out there with a cup. You know, a little tin cup, since he doesn't want a tax, a little tin cup, make a contribution.
Well, I would call the Republicans on it and defy them to explain to the people of Pennsylvania how you can come to the conclusion that if we tax them too much and they're not sure that the wells that they dig are going to make enough money for them. How many of these companies are going to pick up stake and leave?
Goodbye.
I can tell you right now, it's zippo, yep. Nada, zero. Absolutely none. None of these companies are going to pick up stakes. These companies, this Marcellus Shale, Pennsylvania, is like a magnet, literally, from all over the world. According to reports I'm reading, there's companies coming in from Europe, for God's sakes. This is the largest find in the world. They are not going to pick up stakes.
It's a red herring. It's an
absolutely red herring.
And what this is really about is it's the industry has bought and paid a party. They've bought and paid the greed obsessed party, and that this is them doing their deal. We're going to take a break right here. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO and Working America have created an online database called Job Tracker that shows you how corporations shipping jobs overseas is affecting your community. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka.
It allows anyone to see which corporations are the bad actors in their community. The new Job Tracker database details job loss due to outsourcing, safety violations, and discrimination cases. It truly is the first of the kind and largest publicly available housing information on more than 400,000 corporations and subsidiaries.
In the last 10 years, the U.S. has lost more than 5 million manufacturing and 850,000 information sector jobs, many of which have been shipped overseas.
This resource gives working people new ammunition to show that outsourcing has caused an unacceptable and systematic level of job loss. Job Tracker will give everyday people the opportunity to actually see what's happening in their community and shine the light on what corporations are doing. Outsourcing of American jobs is part of a pattern that's eroded the domestic manufacturing base to the point that experts are now questioning whether our national security is at risk.
The U.S. auto industry isn't exactly roaring back just yet, but it is definitely starting to accelerate. Jesse Russell reports.
Some good news this week for the U.S. auto industry, as General Motors says it plans to bring back more than 1,000 workers who had previously been laid off. A deal with United Auto Workers will allow the company to pay 40% of workers at an assembly plant lower wages than the rest of the workforce. That may require some current workers to take a substantial pay cut of nearly half of what they are currently being paid. However, the union argues that a retirement incentive package being offered to those with 29 years of seniority or more will heavily reduce the number of employees who will have their wages cut. Instead, new hires will be brought in at the lower pay tier. In turn, GM is investing $145 million into an Orion Township, Michigan plant and bringing back 1,550 jobs to the region. The vehicle being built will be the only subcompact assembled in the United States with union workers. The Ford Fiesta is assembled in Mexico with non-union labor, and when production starts on the Fiat 500, being brought to the United States in 2012 by Chrysler, that will also happen in Mexico.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Well, that's what they're doing. That's what the Toomey people and the Chamber of Commerce. You can help, though. Help fight back against the transnational Chamber of Commerce and their hit squad cronies like Karl Rove and his front group American Crossroads and the other Dick Armey and his Koch brothers Shill Shack Freedom Works. They're putting up hundreds of millions of dollars to influence our elections. And where are they getting this money from? It appears they're getting it from foreign corporations and even foreign governments. I got to tell you, we got to do something about this, and it's time to call out Pat Toomey and ask him where his money's coming from. Where are you getting the money, brother? What special interest groups and what fat cats are you getting money from, and who's buying our elections? We need to tell Toomey that this is our democracy and it's not for sale. So join other concerned Americans from across Pennsylvania at the Republican headquarters here in Harrisburg, 112 State Street, right down here across from the Capitol, on Tuesday, October 12th, high noon. A whole bunch of people are going to come out and ask, where's the money? Show us where the money came from. And if you've been paying attention to this story, I got to tell you, I didn't know the U.S. Chamber of Commerce was actually a multinational corporation. And, you know, I knew they were run by multinational corporations, but I didn't know they actually took money from foreign countries and foreign governments. You look at the fact that the Chamber of Commerce has got a branch in Bahrain, in Russia, in India, in Dubai, in Egypt, all around the globe. And what do you think they want? What do you think these chambers of commerce in Bahrain want? What do you think they want in Dubai? What do you think they want in Russia? They want to open up our market. They want more access. That's what they want. The people of India, you know what they want? They want more of our jobs. They want us to close down more factories here and move them to India. Why? Because their people need jobs too. And they're smart. I give them credit. We're the dumb ones. We're the ones who've got our heads up our keisters. And I'm hoping at some point we wake up, and this is where I do reach out, and I do ask the people on the extreme right to walk with me and say, look, folks, this country will be nothing without manufacturing. This country will be nothing without our ability to produce product for sale. You know, what's amazing to me is we are taking natural resources. Just what we're talking about here in the state of Pennsylvania with the natural gas. We're talking about pulling natural resources out of our soil, off our land, and shipping it out of the country. You know, West Virginia, the coal that they pull out of the ground, the coal that they're blowing mountaintops off of, that they're ruining mountains over. You know where they're shipping most of that stuff? They're shipping most of that to China. You look at a state like West Virginia, Jake, and I look at the wealth that has been sucked out from under their feet, one of the poorest states in the country, and the wealth that was robbed from the people of West Virginia. I don't want to see that for Pennsylvania. I don't want to see our resource stolen. I don't want to see our resource taken, profited by somebody else, and us get left with strip mines, mountaintops missing, or in our case, a water supply that is devastating.
Oh, yeah, and it gets even better. We don't even, so far, the jobs that they've created haven't been given for the most part to Pennsylvanians.
Well, but I
well it's not a kick in the butt.
I love the
so
ad.
So they can bring in people from Texas and Oklahoma and Mississippi and Louisiana and all over the country and, oh, yeah, pay them a considerable less of a wage than the unionized workers from Pennsylvania.
I love the ad that they run on the radio, the Range Resources ad. You know, I lost my job, and now I got one with Range Resources. They're so good to me. And, oh, I've got a business, and I'm operating at a 10. Well, you know, the farmers ran here. They was doing their problems there, and now what's going on? The Range Resources come in and drill a hole, and we do it okay now. And I'm going, really? I'm wondering if these are the kind of people that the guy in West Virginia, that John Reyes, who's running for Senate there, that they the casting call, you know, for people to hick it up, to look hicky and blue collar. You know, I wonder if that was. We should find out. I would love to know who those people are in those ads. We should try and find out about that, because I would love to see if those are actual people or if those are just actors.
No, those are professional actors, and they did it in South Philly.
No. Not the West Virginia guy. The Range Resource ad.
Oh, okay.
I would love it. We got to find. I think I'm going to call Range Resource on Monday or Tuesday, since it's a holiday. Find out who did those ads, because maybe we can interview them. I would love to talk to that farmer. Because it's, what amazes me is, you know, when you think of a farmer, you think of somebody who looks at the land as something sacred. That's their living. That earth is their living.
I mean, the truth is, Rick, some of these farmers are, you know, pretty close to not making a dime. And when the company comes along and gives them, you know, $500,000 or $1 million, they're pretty pliable. They'll pretty much say anything because they're so happy, and that's all they're concerned about, and that's human nature. They're being used. I mean, let's be honest. You don't agree with that?
Well, since you've said it, no, I don't, actually.
Okay.
You know, some of the farmers that I know, they look at the land as something sacred, and to have that land fouled in some way.
I agree with that. Some farmers do. I'm telling what I'm saying to you is the farmers that have you know, allowed them to come on their land. I mean, some of these farmers were in desperate straits. That's all I'm saying, Rick.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll agree with that. Absolutely. And, but, you know, like, as I've said, I've met a couple people who've said, look, I don't really think that's such a great idea because, you know, what happens to the land if I can't farm it anymore? And that's something we've got to
start. Oh, it's a generational thing, and absolutely, it's a way of life, and to them, you're right. It is sacred to them, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. But with some of these farmers, it's almost to the point where they were going to lose their farms. So someone comes along, and, you know, out of the blue and says, hey, you know, I'll give you $500,000, just sign on the dotted line. I mean, they're more than happy to.
But the reality is, look, this is the resource of this state. This is our resource. We should benefit from it. Simple stuff. Simple stuff. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Jim on line one. How are we doing today, Jim?
Hey, Rick. Happy Halloween.
So soon.
It is truly Fright Night, isn't it?
Oh, I'll tell you, it absolutely is.
You know, this is, may not have a lot to do with what you were talking about earlier. I tuned in late, but I was talking to my garage mechanic and fixing up an older car. And he said, Jim, I can't get any parts for older cars. He said, ever since last 2 years, he said, everything has been crushed and sent to China. You can't get a part for an older car for anything in the world.
Yep. Yeah, I've heard that as well. Because, to be honest, they're producing so much. They need raw material. They need steel. They need this stuff to feed their manufacturing base.
Well, do you remember back in the late 1930s when we were having problems with Japan and they were buying up every piece of scrap metal they possibly could, which they would use later to shoot back at us?
Yep.
It's kind of like the same thing. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but what do you think?
Look, if you're saying that you're worried about China's military using their manufacturing prowess to take us over, one of the things I kind of agree with Christine O'Donnell is I do think China has a world domination plan. I just don't think they plan on invading the country.
China is a very old and intelligent civilization. And they've gone through an awful lot with, of course, their revolution, the Great Leap Forward, and all this stuff under Chairman Mao. And then, of course, the things that happened in the late 1960s when they basically allowed their revolution to devour its own children. And now China has just become an economic dynamo.
Yep.
This stems from the public's simmering anger over the fact that the Wall Street barons who crashed our economy are back to paying themselves multi-million dollar bonuses, while the corporate CEOs who keep downsizing and offshoring our middle-class opportunities are grabbing bigger paychecks than ever for themselves. The wealthy swells are upset by this anger and feel picked on by us riffraff. They don't like being blamed for our economic distress, even though they are to blame, and they certainly don't like the rising populist fervor for more economic fairness in our country. So they're mad at us for being mad at them, claiming that they are victims of our, quote, wealth envy. I'm sure you feel as badly as I do about this, so you'll be glad to know that those living in luxury seem to have found a way to soothe their bad mood. They've gone shopping. Yes, while workaday Americans are scrambling just to cover the rent and buy groceries, the well-heeled are reported to be splurging again, indulging their consumer whims with such pricey pretties as exotic automobiles. One analyst of trends in the luxury car market concedes that sales of Bentleys, Lamborghinis, Maseratis, and other ultra-priced autos have been down the past couple of years. He explained that, quote, it didn't feel right buying a $300,000 Rolls-Royce when people were being foreclosed out of their homes. But this year, the elites are saying, to hell with what the public thinks, I'm going to get me a new Ferrari 458 Italia, the people be damned. This is Jim Hightower saying, how nice for them. But I don't think their conspicuous consumption is going to make anyone feel better about their greed, nor will it quell the public's rising populist fervor. Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Check out our Facebook page, thericksmithshow.com, or you can just go to my Facebook page, Rick Smith. The chairman of the Wisconsin GOP, his name is Reince Priebus. Really? Reince Priebus. He had an interesting statement today, the other day, that I thought was kind of funny. Here's Reince Priebus.
Guessing here, but my guess is he would believe that Obama should be executed and he ought to be treated as a war criminal.
The head of the Wisconsin Republican Party. Yeah. Nice. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Mike on line one. How are we doing today, Mike?
Pretty good, Rick. Hey, this week we've had some things happen in Harrisburg that are visions of the future if people don't wake up.
Desperation City.
They had a bank robbery, actually at the Klein Village, a Giant, and they also robbed the store in broad daylight. The guy didn't wear a mask. And sources tell me that Harrisburg police mustered a tremendous response with three vehicles. Back in the day when cities had money, you'd pull somebody over for a taillight out and have five police cars there.
Yeah, there was a traffic jam. Now, see, to me, that's a worrisome report, you've got a bank robbery and only three people show up to it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. My ex-wife works out there, and she confirmed it. She was there that day. I've had it from two sources that, and what this is what you're going to see in cities that go bankrupt. They can't, one, they don't have the vehicle. They've been instructed not to risk what they've got because they can't replace it.
Right.
And I'm sure this is going on. I'm sure this is scorched earth crisis level response, which basically is if they don't shoot anybody, don't worry about it.
That's a scary premise. But you look at what's going on in Oakland, California. Pretty much the same thing. The police chief said, you know what? We don't have to respond to certain crimes. And in fact, we're not going to. We're only responding to the big stuff. A bank robbery will get maybe two or three cops up.
Yeah, and that's what's going to happen. Now, what that translates into for the listeners, so they can understand what their world is going to look like down the road. When the sun goes down, people will be in their houses, the doors will be locked, the stores will be closed, because nobody can risk being in business after dark, because when they understand they're not going to get police support, the predators know it.
Yep. Well, I mean, to be honest with you, Mike, it'll be like my childhood. I grew up in a neighborhood where, just what you said, nobody was outside except the criminal element. The gang members, the hookers and the pimps, that's who was out at night. The people who were looking for trouble. Everybody else barricaded themselves in the house until morning.
Yep. Now, another very curious event that happened today that I heard from Della, our friend, mutual friend, is that apparently there have been threats levied against the Social Security office in foreign place. In fact, I believe they evacuated the building for a while earlier this week because of written notes that they found somewhere. But the interesting story is they didn't tell the state workers in that building that this happened. Nobody knew.
Really?
And this gets back to one of my pet peeves. What did they do when they had this situation? They used the fire drill modality, which put everybody out in the yard in the target mode.
Boy, that's stupid.
Yeah, well, that's how the state evacuates their building, and everybody knows it. That's what they do. You go stand in a big green grassy field and wait for somebody to tell you what to do.
Basically herding the sheep into the slaughter.
Yeah, exactly. And we in the union have protested mightily about this, and it falls on deaf ears. You know, it's great if you've got a fire drill and you know it's a fire and that's the right thing to do, but that's great. But if you don't, you need to think out of the box and say, I need to disperse people and keep them from bunching up. And we learned that in the infantry. It was pretty simple.
Yep. I got to tell you, the way things are looking, I saw a report that, the city was scrambling just to make payroll. There's so many things, so many hurdles on the horizon. And, as you brought up, one of the first signs is, as you pointed out, police responding to a major crime. In that kind of number, that worries me.
Now, what's really interesting about this, too, is that in most cases where there's been a bank robbery, there was lots of coverage. They showed video pictures of the guy, and here's who we look for. This guy didn't wear a mask, from what I am told. He didn't try to obscure his face or anything. He just walked in broad daylight and did the deed. And I've seen zip, nothing.
And that's pretty bold. I mean, that makes me wonder, what was the guy thinking? Maybe he wanted a day in jail,
or maybe he wanted to mix it up with the big boys to everybody else's detriment. The moral of the story is, people, that if we don't fund the things that protect us, you'll be surprised how fast your world will change.
Well, isn't that what the extreme right wants? The Wild West, the image of the Wild West, and the gunslingers walking around, isn't that? I mean, I've got some friends who they'd love to go back to that.
Well, most of the people who love to go back to that don't have any idea what it was really like. First place, there weren't a lot of people. You weren't in a crowded urban area like you are here.
Right.
They should ask themselves if they want to go back to the Wild Wild West. Not that you're going to the Wild Wild West. It's more like going to Beirut in 82.
Excellent point. Excellent point. As always, Mike, I appreciate the call, buddy.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thanks so much. I didn't hear about the bank robbery. And I sure didn't hear about the threats. Why would you threaten Social Security? I'm trying to figure that one out. Why would you send a threatening note to the Social Security people? I don't know. Just plain nuts. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break here in a minute to talk about the foreclosure thing. But before we go, I want to reiterate the fact that this foreclosure problem, we could have avoided. And I'm blaming the Republicans for this. I am flat out blaming the recalcitrant Republicans who did not allow people with leadership skills and vision to do what needed to be done. And this goes back to the Bush years. This goes back to the end of the Bush term when they just said, here's a boatload of cash. Please don't collapse on my term. Please don't collapse while I'm president. And they threw $700 billion at him. Here, please don't. This is another example of the no party sticking it to the working class. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Zach Carter for the Campaign for America's Future. Stick around. You're going to want to hear this. We're right back.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. If you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
Always by your side.
Hello, I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing, so is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The buildings, they shake, but my heart, it beats still. Oh, Mother of Jesus, I feel pretty ill. I want to go home where my FIFO feels safe. But there ain't no job, the old free state. So I must remain in my beautiful land. I'm doing the best, and I'm doing all I can. So next time you see me, don't ask for my name.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. We've been hearing an awful lot about the foreclosures and the really what the banksters have been doing. You look at that case down in Florida where somebody kicked in the door of the wrong house, broke into the wrong house to kick somebody out of their house. Kind of makes you wonder what the banks are actually thinking. I've got Zach Carter on the line from the Campaign for America's Future. Ourfuture.org is the website. He's going to talk to us a little bit about his piece, Organized Crime, Wall Street's Foreclosure Fraud Machine. Zach, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
You know, I'm looking at this foreclosure mess, And it's, A, it's frustrating because I thought we were, as a country, going to stop this. And B, this just seems to me to be another way that the banks are screwing the working class.
It's really an amazing story. What's really astounding is that it hasn't gotten more attention until now, because really these problems have been persistent in the mortgage market since at least 2005. Basically, banks issued all of these lousy mortgages. Everybody's known that story for years. But with this complicated mortgage-backed security and Wall Street securities business that these mortgages were packaged into, none of the banks really kept their paperwork in order. So nobody knows who owns what mortgages, and some banks think they have the right to foreclose on a house, and they actually don't. And they're screwing up their paperwork, so they're foreclosing on people who are current on their mortgages, who have paid off their mortgages, or on people they're, you know, some other wing of the bank is involved in some sort of loan modification agreement with. It's a huge disaster, but it's the immediate impact is worse for borrowers, of course, but the long-term impact could be really, really hard on the banks.
Yeah, I agree. You know, one of the things that I keep hearing from people and people that I've talked to, there doesn't seem to be any sympathy anymore for people who are losing their homes. So even if the bank has come and taken your house without cause, there doesn't seem to be much sympathy from people that I've talked to, because there's this mean out there that the right wing has put out there that, well, these people have just been irresponsible.
Yeah, well, I mean, that mean is completely wrong. And I think this some of the things that the banks have been doing, the publicity that they're getting for literally breaking and entering and stealing people's stuff, should help change that perception. I mean, a lot of these mortgages were just outright fraudulent to begin with. And if you look at the statistics that the FBI put out there as early as 2004, you know, the FBI was warning about an epidemic of mortgage fraud. And mortgage fraud, 80% of the time, according to the FBI, is committed by the lender. So the issue here is that banks were not only tricking people into loans they couldn't afford, setting them to fail. They were illegally, you know, forging signatures and fudging numbers in order to pump out more of these low quality loans that cause all these foreclosures. So, I mean, people were not just tricked and deceived. I mean, there was a crime that was committed against them, and now that crime is being compounded, where banks are coming up with all sorts of forged documents and forged signatures and lying to judges in order to illegally kick people out of their home.
You know, I remember, I think it was Marcy Kaptur, congresswoman from Ohio, who said, you know what, if they can't produce the documents to you, don't leave the house, barricade yourself inside, do whatever you have to do, because they don't, we've known this, we've known that they haven't had the documentation, we've known this for some time, why haven't we seen any action from Congress or from any other entity?
Well, it's really astounding that there's been a fairly, I guess, anemic at best would be the way to describe the administration's program to cope with foreclosures. It tries to alleviate monthly payment burdens on borrowers. It doesn't actually bring down their overall debt burden. So the long-term effect is that maybe you can afford to stay in your home month to month, but if you continue to pay off this mortgage, you're losing potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars, just giving it away to a bank that has already screwed you over and is not lending to help the economy. And so people figure out that this is actually not a very good deal for them. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner has been very hostile to new arrangements to help troubled borrowers out of concerns that, you know, it's not going to, you know, that there's moral hazard. It won't be helping the right people. Those moral hazard concerns weren't, as prevalent when we were talking about bailing out giant banks. But if you look at what's going to happen here, I mean, you've got potentially, just millions of mortgages here that have been, where the banks can't prove they have the right to foreclose. And if they can't prove they have the right to foreclose, they can't foreclose. So that means really, really big losses for all of the major banks. And big losses big enough to, you know, depending on how fast they hit, to do a lot of damage to their balance sheets. You know, the sort of things that would jeopardize the solvency of these institutions. And that's a dangerous thing for policymakers who are funded by those institutions. For everybody else, you know, I don't think it would be really so bad if we had to take action and break up these big banks if it would in order to help homeowners.
Well, I said that from the very beginning, right when the collapse happened. I said what you do is you take them over, you break them up, and go back to what the banking system that we used to have, where you had small local banks.
Yeah, you know, I was at a conference at the American Enterprise Institute this week, you know, a right-wing think tank, and there's a guy who describes himself as a conservative libertarian named Chris Whalen. He was just saying the only real solution here is, you know, nothing that the government does to try and create jobs and stimulate the economy is going to work until we help homeowners, because they just have this enormous debt burden hanging over their head. And until you deal with that, every policy that that the government has can implement is going to be stymied, or at least face serious hurdles. And you know, this is a conservative libertarian calling for immediate relief for troubled homeowners and to take over and break up the biggest banks. I think the economy's gotten so bad. You know, about a year ago, people were saying, okay, well, things are getting better. The stimulus is working. The stimulus did work, in fact. But we have this banking system that is not able to lend money out of the economy because it has all of these foreclosures embedded on its balance sheet that it doesn't want to recognize all at once. So it's just playing everything very safe. And until we get that financial system taken care of, the economy is never going to get back to full steam.
Yeah, I agree. You know, here's the thing. Right from the beginning, when the collapse happened under Bush, back in September of 08, the first thing I said that they should have done is they should have just gone and never mind the banks, go to the homeowners. Mm-hmm. Fix that side of it. Let people refinance their homes. Because it's not that they can't pay at the time they couldn't pay the mortgage. They couldn't pay it based on the terms that they got screwed into.
Right.
and really, a lot of the people that I talked to who have gotten in that situation, they thought they were signing a fixed rate mortgage. They honestly did.
Common. It's very common.
And you ended up getting these adjustable rates that just went through the roof. And the one woman we talked to a couple years ago, she said, look, you know, when we started out, we were paying $900 a month. We could afford $900 a month. But as the rates went up, we end up paying $2,200 a month. Nobody can afford that kind of jump.
Well, and the representations that the banks made and the mortgage brokers made to borrowers was criminal. In an enormous number of cases, this wasn't just an accident. It wasn't some sort of act of nature that, oops, sometimes finance gets out of control and bad things happen. That is part of the story, but the catalyst here, the original cause is just rampant fraud, absolutely rampant fraud committed against the American middle class and people reaching for the middle class. It's incredibly callous crime. And yet, as you said, much of the public perception is that, you know, these people who were defrauded, who are absolutely defrauded, are somehow, you know, losers who don't deserve help. It makes absolutely no sense, particularly given that, you know, even if these people were losers, not helping them is wrecking the economy. It's dragging the entire economy down.
And it's destroying my property value as well as my entire neighborhood.
And keeping other people from being able to get jobs and all sorts of things. You know, these people are spending all their money. Every mortgage payment that people make on a house that is, you know, deeply underwater, they're just giving away their money that they could be going out and spending in the real economy, and they're giving it to a bank that isn't lending. Yeah. That is a terrible, terrible thing for consumers to be doing with their money in the middle of a near depression.
Well, what we're doing is we're making the investor class wealthier. We're making the rich people wealthier. The big corporations. I look at Norfolk Southern. Corporation just got a loan, $250 million, 100-year term, for less than 6%. And I'm saying, if we can give big businesses huge amounts of money to hold on to and to sit on, and not hire people and not invest, we should be able to at least to go to the homeowner and say, you know what, we're gonna make favorable terms. The rates are low right now. We're gonna refinance people's mortgages. We need paper pushers to get jobs. Here is an excellent opportunity, an excellent win-win. For a couple of bucks, you refinance your mortgage, and everybody wins in this.
Well, I mean, the thing is, if you have a lot of people going to the banks, and the banks are actually going to rewrite these mortgage contracts so that they reflect the actual current value of the home and not the inflated bubble mania value from 2006. The bank actually does take a loss, and the bank should take a loss. It deserves to, and the economic reality says that it is already taking a loss, because if they don't do anything to help this person, eventually the loan's going to be in foreclosure, and the bank's going to take a big loss. What this fraud scandal means with the foreclosure and with the foreclosure fraud and the paperwork malfeasance is that the banks don't just take the big loss on foreclosure; they don't even get to foreclose. The borrower can potentially stay in that house without paying the bank, because the bank doesn't have the right to evict them.
Good point.
So the potential losses here are absolutely catastrophic for the major banks.
And they end up
legal liabilities from fraud.
And it ends up on the back of the taxpayers in the end.
It can. I mean, it depends on what happens. I think eventually, if you have bailout size losses, which is certainly conceivable, then taxpayers could end up on the hook. But in in that case, they're on the hook for actually fixing the economy, not for subsidizing bank bonuses and helping banks that don't lend. You know, I think we would all be much happier if our tax dollars went to breaking up large institutions and helping homeowners than to keeping useless behemoths afloat and subsidizing bank bonuses.
Excellent way of putting that. I've always advocated for going back to the homeowners loan corporation. One of the things that Franklin Roosevelt did back during the Depression that actually worked and actually turned a profit. It actually profited in the people, and it saved people from losing their homes. And we didn't
right.
do that.
One of the things that people are saying about TARP right now is that because it's going to turn a paper profit and show that even Citigroup or whatever was able to pay this money back. It ignores the fact that we're still getting a pretty lousy deal relative to what the market, the going rate was for helping banks out at this point in time in 2008. But it also ignores the fact that right now we're already on the hook. What TARP showed the markets was the government will stand behind big banks, no matter how stupid they behave, and no matter how catastrophic their losses, indefinitely and infinitely into the future. So the market now believes that the government will pay infinite losses for these huge banks, which encourages them to take risks. And it's setting things up for another really big crisis. So we're already, in effect, on the hook here. Our money is already at stake. We can spend that money helping banks in the future when they destroy themselves, or we can send it preemptively to help homeowners. Like you're saying, the Homeowners Loan Corporation is a great model. You can use the power of eminent domain, in fact, just to seize these mortgages from banks at their the current value of the home, and then write them down for homeowners and sell them back to the private market at a profit.
It makes perfect sense to me. Which is why the Republicans stood steadfast in opposition. And the last thing I wanted to get into, I'm looking towards November.
Yeah.
And you look at these foreclosures, you look at the economy, who knows where this is going to go after November. The Republicans have already said that they're in favor of tax cuts, more deregulation. They're going to do away with the health care bill. They want to do away with the financial oversight bill.
From the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therichmanshow.com.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say, come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Let's have a tea party, won't it be fun?
Yeah!
I am the tea party people!
Yeah!
I am the tea party people!
How many of you have heard of the American Family Association? That sounds like a nice, happy name, doesn't it? A good Christian conservative, values-oriented group, right? You think? They stand for traditional marriage and anti-pornography. They're pro-life people. They're good Christian folks, right? Granted, they stand for deregulation of the oil industry and lobbying against the Employee Free Choice Act, but they don't worry about that. Screw those workers and the environment. Who cares? The Southern Poverty Law Center has said in a report that the American Family Association, along with other groups, helped drive the religious right anti-gay crusade. But, that's what Jesus would do. In fact, according to the American Family Association, Jesus would have been happy to see the people in Tennessee lose their home. Jesus would have stood there and watched the people's house burn down with them. Yeah, that's what they're saying. In fact, when the dogs and cats that were in the house died, because the firemen wouldn't respond, when the family's, pets all died, burnt up, like Chinese food, Jesus would have been in favor of that. That's what these crazy people believe. A Tennessee fire department's decision to let a house burn, according to the AP, after a homeowner failed to pay the $75 firefighting fee, has inspired an intense debate about the intersection of government and personal responsibility. Brian Fisher of the American Family Association weighs in with a perspective that thus far has been missing from the conversation. The good Christian view. What would Jesus do? Let the mother burn, apparently. In a blog post titled, Firefighters Did the Christian Thing in Letting the House Burn to the Ground, Fisher argues that because the homeowner failed to pay the $75 firefighting fee, the fire department did the right thing in letting the property burn. The post is written in black text on a black background, highlighted to read. According to Fisher, the right thing to do is also the Christian thing because, the right thing, by the way, is also a Christian thing because there can be no difference between the two. So if it's the right thing, it's the Christian thing. The right thing to do is always to be the Christian thing to do, according to these crazy people. And the Christian thing to do will always be the right thing to do. So you see their circular logic? See how this works? Simple minds in action. Very nice. In this case, in the eyes of Mr. Fisher, the Christian and the right thing is to argue that personal choices should trump the obligation of a civil society. A Christian worldview rewards responsibility and stresses individual responsibility and accountability, which in the end makes everyone more safe and more prosperous. If Fisher's vision of a libertarian Jesus seems out of character for the same God who advocating love thy neighbor, that's the fault of our namby-pamby lady culture, according to Mr. Fisher. A namby-pamby lady culture. In this case, critics of the fire department are confused both about right and wrong and about Christianity, according to him. And it is because they have fallen prey to a weakened, feminized version of Christianity that is only about softer virtues, such as compassion. And it's not in any part about the muscular Christian virtues of individual responsibility and accountability. This story, he says, illustrates the fundamental difference between the sappy secular worldview, which unfortunately too many Christians have adopted, and the mature, robust Judeo-Christian worldview, which made America the strongest and most prosperous nation in the world. So, at least this answers now what the one question, what would Jesus do? And you know what Jesus would do about foreclosures? Well, he'd kick those deadbeats out on the curb. That's what he'd do. In fact, he'd go in there just like he did with the in the church with the money changers and throw their tables over and kick them out of their house, right?
Actually, the Bible says he did throw the money changers out of the temple.
Yeah, the bankers, the bankers!
Apparently, the man doesn't realize he's making the case for the other side.
Oh, my God. You know, my head, when I read that, my head was about ready to explode. Because, you sit back and you go, you know, all those years of being beaten senseless by these sexually repressed nuns, all these years of just being pummeled with that stick. The one thing they did pound into me is, really, I mean, honestly and truthfully, the one thing they did pound into me, even though they showed me no compassion, was to show compassion to others. In a worldview that Christianity was about helping people, it was about peace, and it was about justice. It wasn't about how much money I can put into my pocket. And, you know, you saw it every Saturday on those crazy TV shows with people like Jim Baker and that woman with all the really bad makeup and some of the other crazy ones.
You mean his wife?
Yeah, I don't remember what her name was.
Yes.
She just passed away recently.
She just passed away.
So she just had bad makeup, that's all. And there are a lot of people with bad makeup.
No, just because it was caked on, I mean, she was, oh.
Got shovel, makeup next. But you know, you would watch these people, and they're just perverting the Bible. You know, the good Ernest Angley, And the other guy, God wants you to give your money to me. $5 in the pocket of the Bank of Christianity, the $5 in the Bank of the Lord.
I do remember many years ago, you know, now I don't want to give away my age here, but there was a Reverend Ike. The Lord wants you to be rich. And that was his message.
Yeah, well, yeah.
The Lord wants you to be rich.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being rich.
And he wants me to be rich, too. That's why you should
send me your
a
money.
Contribution.
Send me your money. Well, wait a second. Hold on. You've hit something there. You've kind of hit something there. Was that dog whistle politic with Tom Corbett? Was he reaching out to the crazy religious base? That whole
he was reaching out.
Well,
he was reaching
out
to
I'm
going to
have
right
to think
wing.
That through.
Yeah, I mean,
crazy does.
We're being sarcastic, but Corbett has. I mean, he's been a chameleon. His whole political career has been kind of moderate to, moderate conservative. But he's really veered to the right.
Well, here's the thing. I'm hoping he's going to actually do his job. And his job is to file lawsuits against banks who screw their customers. And he should be doing it. I want to know why he hasn't initiated a lawsuit against these foreclosures. There have been other attorneys generals who have done this. Why has Tom Corbett not? Why has he not stood up in public and said, you know what? I know you're giving me tens of thousands of dollars. You're filling my campaign coffers, but it's my job to be the attorney general of the state of Pennsylvania. It's my job to protect the citizens of this state. And I want to know why he hasn't done it. I want to know. I want to know now.
Rick, he's failed the smell test on a couple of issues.
Yep.
Let's even go back. And I know it's very popular, these lawsuits. Come on, let's be honest. These lawsuits, I'm sorry. When he had these corruptions, he went after politicians, Mike Vian and the like. What he should have done is recused himself when he decided to run for governor, recused himself and brought in the U.S. attorney. He failed the smell test there, and he's failing the smell test on Marcello Shale, and I guarantee you he's going to fail the smell test on some other key issues when it affects working people.
Yep. We're right back. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachman, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO and Working America have created an online database called Job Tracker that shows you how corporations shipping jobs overseas is affecting your community. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka.
It allows anyone to see which corporations are the bad actors in their community. The new Job Tracker database details job loss due to outsourcing, safety violations, and discrimination cases. It truly is the first of the kind and largest publicly available housing information on more than 400,000 corporations and subsidiaries.
In the last 10 years, the U.S. has lost more than 5 million manufacturing and 850,000 information sector jobs, many of which have been shipped overseas.
This resource gives working people new ammunition to show that outsourcing has caused an unacceptable and systematic level of job loss. Job Tracker will give everyday people the opportunity to actually see what's happening in their community and shine the light on what corporations are doing. Outsourcing of American jobs is part of a pattern that's eroded the domestic manufacturing base to the point that experts are now questioning whether our national security is at risk.
The U.S. auto industry isn't exactly roaring back just yet, but it is definitely starting to accelerate. Jesse Russell reports.
Some good news this week for the U.S. auto industry, as General Motors says it plans to bring back more than 1,000 workers who had previously been laid off. A deal with United Auto Workers will allow the company to pay 40% of workers at an assembly plant lower wages than the rest of the workforce. that may require some current workers to take a substantial pay cut of nearly half of what they are currently being paid. However, the union argues that a retirement incentive package being offered to those with 29 years of seniority or more will heavily reduce the number of employees who will have their wages cut. Instead, new hires will be brought in at the lower pay tier. In turn, GM is investing $145 million into an Orion Township, Michigan plant and bringing back 1,550 jobs to the region. The vehicle being built will be the only subcompact assembled in the United States with union workers. The Ford Fiesta is assembled in Mexico with non-union labor, and when production starts on the Fiat 500, being brought to the United States in 2012 by Chrysler, that will also happen in Mexico.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Yes, the hammer's about ready to fall. Congress is about to launch an investigation into the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, or I should say the International Chamber of Commerce, and their financing. The third-ranking House Democrat had said tonight that, you know what, the door is open. House Majority Whip James Clyburn, Democrat from South Carolina, opened the door to a congressional inquiry into the chamber and whether it used foreign dollars to fund its political activities. Oh, sure, Clyburn said of the possibilities of an investigation into the chamber during an appearance on MSNBC. Unfortunately, just like a Democrat, not between now and November 2nd. I'm telling you, what should have happened? They should be calling for this right now. Because, look, after November 2nd, the damage is done. And this is the problem I have with Democrats. If this were the Republicans, if this situation were flipped around, you bet your sweet bippy that the Republicans would be holding hearings every single day. There would be court hearings. There would be congressional hearings. They'd be holding hearings in closets where Larry Craig, you know, usually hangs out. It'd be all over the place.
Let me be clear. I am not gay. I never have been gay.
But they would be holding hearings everywhere. No matter where you'd go, there'd be someone screaming about, oh, the Democrats are using money from someone else. But the Democrats just don't seem to be, you know, this is one of those moments, folks. This is one of those moments where someone goes, okay, show me what you're made of. Show me what kind of stones you got. This is where the white working middle class, Jake, says, you know what? What kind of a man are you? Are you going to stand up for me? Or are you just going to, you know, jump up and down like a little kid?
I am the man. Do you hear me? I am the man.
Well, show me that then. I mean, you know, the reality is here. This is an issue. I think this is an issue that would resonate with people. I know it's infuriating me, the fact that they are taking money. And we've been talking about it pretty much ad nauseum for the last couple of days because I think this is such an important issue. The fact that they are taking money from countries like Bahrain, countries like India, Russia, Dubai, Egypt, I got a real problem with that. Well, and if you've got a problem, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Or do you think it's okay? Never mind. Those countries, they've been lobbying our Congress for years. You know, the South Korean government spends millions of dollars lobbying to get their autos into the U.S. The Japanese government has spent hundreds of millions of dollars lobbying our country to get their Japanese cars into this country. Yeah, it's not a big deal anymore. I think it's a big deal.
This can be very insidious. I mean, it threatens our economic security. If it's left gone to the extreme, and it could very well be, depending on who controls government, we can get to the point where it's actually going to threaten our security. I mean, think about that on a certain level. And I think you said it last night. You said, and I tend to agree with you, it's close to being treasonous.
Well, but here, what do you think that those countries are given money for? What do you think that they're involving themselves at this for? So that they get themselves a good deal, so that they can use the chamber to lobby for them when they need a little help getting a better number of cars to come in, or a better number of products to come into this country, or to be able to dump their stuff here. Folks, nobody does anything for free. They didn't sign up for this just because out of the goodness of their heart. The Russian companies, they didn't do it just because they're, we believe in America. No, they didn't. They go, we can screw America. At least that's how I'm seeing it.
Oh,
you know, I got to be honest.
Absolutely. I mean, these, I don't know what they call them. I mean, the Chamber of Commerce can call them what they want to.
AmCham. AmCham. AmCham chapters.
That sounds so innocuous and vanilla and harmless. But you can call them what you want. I mean,
and today
we're selling America, and now we're ratcheting it up.
In the middle of this whole thing, today you want to talk about stones, and this is where the Democrats, they better learn a lesson from the right. That today the Chamber of Commerce, today in Washington, D.C., held a reception for the Bahrainian government. For the foreign minister of Bahrain, for business people, for their ministers of commerce. You want to talk about stones?
I mean, you wonder why. One of the reasons the Democrats have been so far this cycle have been taken on the chin. Yes, Obama was elected. It was controversial, and the economy hasn't recovered near to the extent that you should. But the vast array of monies. You look at some of these races, the key race in this state. Right now, Sustek and Toomey. Toomey a little bit more. He's raising money in the state. Then you go outside of the state. Sustek's having a hard time. Why? Because all the other Democrats are going out into these sources out in within the nation. And he has to compete with that. But beyond that, the corporate money is just a sea, and then on top of that, the chamber is giving $75 million, and then you find out what they're doing. They're getting literally money in from all over the world. The Democrats, financially, and at the end of the day, the elections don't always come down to money, but you have to have enough money to compete with your competitor. If you're being outspent 3, 4, 5 to 1, you got a problem.
Well,
some of these Democrats are being outspent by three, four, five to one. You look online.
And all you see are Pat Toomey ads. You look, for the longest time, you only saw Pat Toomey ads. Why? Because he had the money. He is the Wall Street guy. He's the guy that Wall Street has anointed with unlimited funds. Last time I saw, he had $10 million to Sestak's 5.
It's a little bit better right now.
The number I saw from the site that we looked at last night was $10 million to $5 million. That includes primary money.
Right, right.
What you're talking about is primary money. I'm talking about in the election coming up to...
Well, what I'm talking about, if we can clarify, right, the money they raised the last quarter, to me was about 3.8, Sustek 3.2. That's not that much difference. But,
in this quarter, but
right,
overall,
the quarter,
they're
overall,
$10 million to
yes,
$5 million.
Yes, yes.
And in fact, Sestak's actually in debt because he spent more than he's raised, according to the information that I found. Because, look, in this environment, you've got to buy TV ads. And you know, think about this for a second. Think about how incestuous our system is. Corporations control the media. You've got a handful of very large corporations who control about 80% of everything you see, hear, and read. In order to get your message out, you have got to advertise with those corporations. So to them, it doesn't matter. The Democrats, the Republicans, they can fight it out all they want. Who wins in this? The corporations. You got to run TV ads. You got to run radio ads. And where do they do it? They do it with the big corporations. And that gives them more power, that gives them more money, and that gives them more access. And until we break several things in this country to take it back, and I've been saying for the longest time we need to undo the telecom bill of 96 at the minimum, break up Citadel, break up Cumulus, break up Clear Channel. Put ownership of radio and television back into local hands. That's the first thing you have to do. If you cannot do anything else, that has to be done. And then you got to take the money out of politics. You've got to stop with this unlimited funding by corporations. You got to go and undo the Citizens United case. You got to get rid of that. The fact that Karl Rove and the Chamber of Commerce and Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works and blah, 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 and Americans for Kittens and Americans for We Love Apple Pie and all these other euphemistic name groups spending millions and millions of dollars attacking not just Democrats, but attacking this country's basic principle of caring for our neighbor. I mean, and you know, we're buying it, man, because it's in your ear constantly. It's constantly there. It's like a drumbeat constantly. And when you hear it enough, it's you know, it's like osmosis. You're just absorbing. And you're not, it's not even going through your filters. It's a constant drumbeat. And it's always there.
And it's very difficult to change a system where one party is, I'm not saying there aren't some Democrats that are owned by corporate interests, but the Republican Party right now is owned hook, line, and sinker by the corporate interest, and it is getting worse.
And you look at the Tea Party. This is a corporate front group. Granted, there are some people who, you know, who believe that, you know, they're out there fighting the good fight. You're not. The corporations have taken over. When you see those pimped out buses, you know, the Tea Party Express buses, the big party buses that are going around with the beautiful decals. And I got to tell you, those are beautiful buses. If I owned that bus, I wouldn't take it anywhere near a road. I would just stand and look at it all the time because it's a beautiful bus, about $200,000 a piece. Of that, grassroots organizations don't buy $200,000 buses. They buy beat up old vans with square wheels and a bad muffler and holes in the roof. And they spray paint it. That's what grassroots groups do.
Grassroots organizations don't have a whole staff traveling literally around the country for month after month after month. They can't afford that. And that's exactly what happened during the debate from healthcare. I was there in probably the most famous town hall healthcare meeting.
That guy was a nitwit, though.
But to go through that and to see out thousands and thousands of people showed up, Rick. It was amazing, and they came from the whole eastern part of the state. And to see the money, the bus there, and you see these guys with suits out there patrolling and giving instructions to their lieutenants, and you would have, you know, the opponents of healthcare would have you believe that, well, this was just an honest reaction.
It was spontaneous.
Spontaneous, and it was the American way. It was the corporate way. And they bought that system, they controlled that system, they knew that system inside and out, and they gave the impression that in the area that I live, it was massively, by huge numbers, against health care reform. Not so. Not so.
Yeah, and which is why I've been saying for the longest time, the Tea Party thing is overblown. It's gotten so much media coverage, and if you look at the online community, it's basically dead. The meetup groups, nothing there. You're not seeing, you know, I saw a 9-12 group at the one local diner. There were three guys there. And I think they've probably been meeting at that same table for 20 years. So there's nothing new here. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free consumer report by Calhoun Associates by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4766. 22. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Apparently, you and I owe an apology to the extravagantly rich in our society. They're reported to be in a deep pout and a political funk because we the people have hurt their feelings. This stems from the public's simmering anger over the fact that the Wall Street barons who crashed our economy are back to paying themselves multi-million dollar bonuses, while the corporate CEOs who keep downsizing and offshoring our middle-class opportunities are grabbing bigger paychecks than ever for themselves. The wealthy swells are upset by this anger and feel picked on by us riffraff. They don't like being blamed for our economic distress, even though they are to blame, and they certainly don't like the rising populist fervor for more economic fairness in our country. So they're mad at us for being mad at them, claiming that they are victims of our, quote, wealth envy. I'm sure you feel as badly as I do about this, so you'll be glad to know that those living in luxury seem to have found a way to soothe their bad mood. They've gone shopping. Yes, while workaday Americans are scrambling just to cover the rent and buy groceries, the well-heeled are reported to be splurging again, indulging their consumer whims with such pricey pretties as exotic automobiles. One analyst of trends in the luxury car market concedes that sales of Bentleys, Lamborghinis, Maseratis, and other ultra-priced autos have been down the past couple of years. He explained that, quote, it didn't feel right buying a $300,000 Rolls-Royce when people were being foreclosed out of their homes. But this year, the elites are saying, to hell with what the public thinks, I'm going to get me a new Ferrari 458 Italia, the people be damned. This is Jim Hightower saying, how nice for them. But I don't think their conspicuous consumption is going to make anyone feel better about their greed, nor will it quell the public's rising populist fervor.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in the world, their lives. Crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation. Wasting time in the unemployment lines.
Help fight back against the transnational Chamber of Commerce and their hit squad cronies like Karl Rove and his front group American Crossroads, and the other hit group at Dick Armey's Koch Brothers Shill Shack over at FreedomWorks. They are putting hundreds of millions of dollars into this election cycle to convince you that up is down and back is forward and that whipping the car around and heading down the wrong side of the road is a good idea. I'm telling you, it's not. And we need to call Pat Toomey out and say, you know what? Where's the money coming from? I want to know how much money he's taken from the Chamber of Commerce and where they got that money from.